first book I've been reading.
I need one.
We don't have another one.
I have.
Oh, you do? We have another chance.
No, I don't have that many.
Did you hear my offer?
Ulster and the Jerusalem.
Did you hear my offer? Did you read my offer?
We're going to Tiberias with the family.
You're on set.
So I thought I would take one and show it around. I used to rent my husband's books, and that's how we did it.
Well, that's all fine. I'll be able to get through Pesach financially without the okay. If you don't have a Haggadah, you want to borrow, you're welcome to borrow. Okay, it'll be easier because I'll announce the pages. Okay, a few housekeeping things. First of all, as you see now, those of you who came early, you saw the men leaving. The sunset is only going to get later. So therefore, the next time we meet, we'll have to meet at 8 o'clock because they'll be dominating until 7:45 by the after Pesach. Okay? So I just want everybody to understand it'll be 8 o'clock, and Alex will help me prophesize that. Number two, I don't remember the topic I had scheduled because it's not important given I'm on the list anyway. But would you want me to talk about the Jewish attitude towards the land, I mean, in other words, as to the land of Israel before Yom HaTzmaut, or just take another topic? What? Not tonight, I'm talking about afterwards. Unlike you, I planned for these. No, I prepared.
I can do lesson plans.
Well, that's also going to be, I'm going to bring this up right now. Number three is, okay, this is a very dangerous question. Normally I try to finish by 8:30, 8:35 later. With this material, I can go on to 2 hours, which I'm not going to do. If you want me to finish at 8:30, I'll just stop. You'll tell me then, and I always say people vote with their feet. You literally vote with your feet. People will leave if we're in the middle, whatever. But I don't know if to go a little further or not go further based on, well, you'll figure it out. The other thing is, I feel bad, and I feel good, that I gave the Haggadah last year, I think, to Steve, and I don't know anybody else here. And I don't want to bore you by repeating things that you know. So I'm going to put in a couple of things that not out in the Haggadah that have never been said before. Okay. Now, and especially also there are people who have written me and saying how much they're enjoying it, but it sort of makes it hard for me to, if you already read the Haggadah, to say over the same thing. Okay. This is the source sheet for tonight. We'll get to it. Okay. We'll come back to the sheet, I guess, a little bit when it comes to the Manishtana, but before we start, the name of the name of the ritual that we are doing a week from tonight, exactly, is called?
The Seder.
The word Seder means?
Order.
If you had to pick out a bunch of things to do in a row that are least connected to each other and seem to be out of order, I would do the Seder. Okay? And that's why I wrote the name of the Haggadah called Making Seder of the Seder. If you don't know, and I'm talking to people who've been, many of you, most of you, Seders 50 years, it makes no sense. Why? And that's why I gave you the sheet. On a regular Friday night, where we use the Sidur, which is also meant to have an order, okay? But we used to do it 52 weeks a year, so it's very easy. 54 weeks a year, so it's very easy to say, okay, follow the order. On Seder night, compared to every Friday night, it's nuts. If you were a child, okay, and you weren't prepared, the child wasn't prepared, so okay, you say, I've already gathered, that's going to say Kiddush, okay, like every other week, we say Kiddush. Okay, it's a little different, okay, we say Kiddush. And after Kiddush, what do we do every week?
We wash.
Okay, we go to wash. Good, great. The child's very clever, they see that we don't make a broth. Says, and now we're going to have the meal. So what do? A little piece of vegetable. The child says, where's the rest? Right? What's going on here? We eat a little, After we wash, no bracha. And then we take the matzah. And first of all, we invite people to come to eat, which is also nuts. When do you have to invite people to come to eat?
Before the meal.
If you're in America, you have to invite them 6 months in advance. But if in Israel, okay, I got an invite, very nice invite, last week's Thursday night, late, it's okay. Right? So you invite a week before, 2 weeks of Seder, maybe even 3 days before. Right? When do we invite people to the Seder? After we eat the carbos. Right? What's going on? Why do we have to fight? That's the time to invite people? Did anybody ever walk in and say, oh, I'm waiting outside. I just heard you invite me. Let's come in. Ridiculous, right? And we do it every year. We don't say it's not ridiculous. The more you think about it, the more ridiculous it is. And then, out of nowhere, we take the matzah, which is covered. Nobody's talking about the matzah. And we just take it and we break the middle matzah and put it back. Where did that come from? Okay? And then we ask the four questions, which we will see not only could never be asked by a child, but and never answered. Okay? Which is also interesting. Right? The whole Haggadah, we never answer the four questions. Is there any place in the Haggadah that says why we dip two times? No. Any place in the Haggadah that says why we leave? No. So, and then we go and have, it's like Musaf on Yom Kippur, I say. Nobody's paying attention. People who, it's not as long as the Musaf, and you're not as tired because you did eat a vegetable, but but half of us are tired from cleaning. And they go on, and there's the Gemaras, and the Medrash, and the stories, and then another hour before you even get to the food. If you wanted to get people's attention, first you let them eat a few pieces of matzah, and then maybe, you always know that. The smorgasbord first, and then you can do the speeches. Anyway, doesn't make any sense at all, correct? And I can go on and on and on. Hallel is never broken up the whole year. Why is Hallel broken up in the middle? We say the first two paragraphs of Hallel, we stop. And then we go wash and have a meal, and then we go back to Hallel. Why do the rabbis do that? I mean, all of it doesn't make any sense. So, to be introduction, it's not as interesting as what we're going to do in the Divrei Torah, but if you pay attention to the four, principles of the Haggadah, which I've discovered, then it will all start to make sense. I'm not going to do them in the order that I do it, because I want to show you. This is the most important one. If everybody turns to either page 88, Seyu Lamad, it's right after Bisha Anza. We're not going to sing tonight. Okay, we could, but then I won't have, less time to teach Torah. One of the principles of the Haggadah, again, it makes no sense, the first two words. What does it mean? Go out and learn. Now, the Sephardim have to reenact, to feel as if they left Mitzrayim. Many of the Sephardic groups have an act, reenact, and they take on their shoulders, and they go outside, and they come back in, etc. This doesn't mean that. Go out and learn. What do we have to go out? We're in the middle of the table. What do you mean go out? So it's very clear. And again, I believe, just like the rabbis imitated in the Mishnah, the Torah is very, very lacking of words, and every word is important, every letter is important. So too, when they wrote the Mishnah, they did not write 90% down, and they wrote it down very carefully for you to extract through certain hints and rules. So too with the Haggadah. The rabbis wrote Seyu Lamad, they could have said Lamad, all right, or Lumod, whatever. Why do you mean go out? Go out from the simple explanation of Haggadah. I think it's nothing to do with anybody here, but a travesty that people learn the Haggadah and say the Haggadah when they're in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, the way they said it when they were 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And we have to understand that on a simple level. If anything I just showed you was the rabbis weren't idiots, and the rabbis put it together in a proper way, and I can prove it very quickly in a moment, but you have to go out. And each year, just like you're not meant to study Rashi and the Torah on the same level as you did when you were 5, and the same level you did when you were 25, you're not supposed to study, you're supposed to go deeper every year. And that one of the main principles of the Haggadah is to try to understand it more deeply. And I will prove it to you. What does the rest of the paragraph say, Seyu Lamad? without going into details, again, I'm assuming that everybody here has gone over the Haggadah at least once or twice in their lives, so they know some of the story. It says, who was the worst person in the Torah? Doesn't say, it says the opposite of Paro, you see? We say the Haggadah every year, we don't even pay attention because it's in the middle. Who was the worst person in the Haggadah, it says? Mabi case, Lavan Arami, Lavan was worse than Paro. Right? Lavan was worse than Paro because Lavan tried to destroy the whole people and Paro only wanted to destroy them physically, Lavan destroyed them spiritually and physically, etc., etc. You read the Torah, you would never suspect that Lavan is the worst guy in the Torah. Correct?
Yeah,
Rabbi said it right here. So obviously we're meant to understand things on a deeper level. We're not meant to understand on a simplistic level Paro is a bad guy, blah, blah, blah. Okay? Therefore, this first principle is try to understand Haggadah on a deeper level, which means sometimes you got to prepare. If you want to give a shir, not a shir, I don't say a hashir at the Seder, but if you want to discuss the issues at the Seder, just like you would never come to a political debate without doing your homework and doing that, you shouldn't come to any debate or discussion or whatever without preparing. You have 1 week to prepare. Don't spend so much time, somebody says, we always paint before Pesach. I said, that's not in the Shulchan Aruch. But I said, don't spend so much time cleaning. Spend time preparing yourself, your neshama, to feel like you're a slave and then become free. Okay, that's the hard part. That's the hardest part of the Seder. Okay, which we'll come to in a few minutes. Okay, so the first principle is say Ulaman. Second principle is, as much as Jews and Israel specifically is a very child-oriented country, there is no other holiday in the Torah or any mitzvah in the Torah that I know of where children are commanded in the Torah that they have to be part of the experience. Okay? We like to think Purim is, nothing in the Torah. Go look at the Megillah, there's nothing about children in the Megillah. Okay? Look at any other holiday, but children. You got to tell the bincha, the whole experience here is to give it over to the children. And if we haven't given it over to the children or grandchildren, one day we'll do a topic why I'll show you why grandparents have a specific responsibility to teach Torah to their children, grandchildren, but it is to give it over to the next generation. I had a very rude awakening when I got to the former Soviet Union and found out they lost the tradition of a family having a Seder, and we had to do Seders by community. So there was no such thing as children giving it, you know, we had to give it over to the entire country. But it means giving it over and making them understand the importance of being Jewish, not just Pesach. The importance of staying Jewish, being Jewish, that's what Seder night is about. So giving that over to the next generation, whether if they say before the Seder or they say even after the Seder, you know, now I understand why it's important to be Jewish. You've accomplished the purpose. And you have to also say it to yourself. Okay, that's the second principle. The third principle, okay, is Rabbi Soloveitchik said, the reason we do all these psukim and this and that, because essentially this is a mitzvah in Torah Sheba'al Peh. Meaning, just like the Gemaras quote psukim in order to prove a point, etc., etc., so too the whole mitzvah of the night of Seder is set up in the Haggadah like a Gemara Shir, like a piece of Gemara, in order to prove the different concepts. But like any Torah Sheba'al Peh, it's only the beginning point. What he says on the daf is not so important as what you say out loud. Okay? Say out loud or expand upon it. So you have to say the words just to get through it, but more important is you have to, you have to expand on it, and that which is important to you, okay? All right, and finally the fourth, which is not necessarily more important in the order of importance, is there's no other day or time that I know of where the mitzvah is to feel something. You have to feel, the mitzvah is to feel like you were a slave. Very hard to feel like you're a slave living in Ashkelon. Okay? Maybe you work so hard you feel like you're a slave. That you choose to do that. If it's not a choice, then you're a slave. So feeling like you're a slave, feeling and more than empathizing, feeling as if we Rambam says you have to feel like you left Egypt, not they, we. How do you feel that? When you turn on TV or whatever and you see people suffering in Ukraine and you start to cry, you empathize to the point where you feel it's like almost like you. Okay? That's what we have to do. And all the things that we do, all the rituals and everything, is to get us to feel that feeling.
What a leaning.
What?
To feel like a king, a leaning.
That's exactly the point. We're going to get to it. Okay? On the one hand, you feel like a slave.
Yeah.
And then 5 minutes later, you got to feel like a king.
Yeah.
How do you do that? Why do you do that? We're going to get to it. Pesach is a very strange evening, as we will see in a moment. Okay. So that's the introduction. Only 7:45. Okay? Now, let's go through the Haggadah. I'm not going to go through everything, obviously. I'm going to go through the things that I think are the most interesting and comprehensive in terms of Jewish content. Okay? All right. So we did the four principles. I'll give you an example how the Seder is very tight and is in order. There are a lot of 15s in the Seder, even though you've never heard it. Everybody goes 4, 4, 4, 4, right? 15 is in the Seder. That's the most important number. Yet we don't see it, right?
Well,
there are 15 steps in the Beit HaMikdash. There are 15 steps, Kadesh or Katz, to you in the Seder. There are 15 Dayenus, 15 Kama Ma'alot Tavot. How many steps? So we'll see a lot of 15. I know, that's why I'm here. Okay? Kama Ma'alot Tavot. Doesn't say Kama Dvarim Tovim. Kama Ma'alot. Steps, just like the Beit HaMikdash in Dayenu. Okay? Number 15. The rabbis embedded a lot of material in the Seder that we're supposed to unpack. Okay. So we said the 15 things, that's why we're supposed to say the 15 things, it's not 14, Shulchan Aruch is 2, yes. And then we do the Kiddush, and again, every single thing is a different kind of Kiddush, and why, etc. Then we get to, and we wash. The reason we wash, by the way, the rabbis say very simply, we want the children involved. Therefore, in order to get the children involved, we don't say a bracha. We wash over a vegetable. We never do that the whole year round. At the last, why do we wash over a vegetable? Halavai, children would ask, why do we wash on a vegetable? But they don't, but that's the point. Okay? But the name of the vegetable, that interested me my whole life.
The name?
Right? What do we call the name of the vegetable?
Karpas.
What does karpas mean?
I don't know.
So when I was a kid, I was given two explanations. They said, in Greek, because they spoke Greek at that time, a lot of Israel was influenced, Greeks influenced a lot of the Seder. Afikoman is a Greek word.
Yeah.
Why? As karpas in Greek is a green vegetable. Okay?
Okay.
What?
The pas is from the pasim, from Yosef's coat.
Very good.
What?
Did you read it?
What?
No.
Good. Excellent. We're going to get to it in 2 minutes. Very good. Excellent.
What is
it took me 10 years to find that answer.
What does it mean?
Wait, that's what we'll get
what
to.
About that?
Karpas. Then I heard, then it says the rabbi say, karpas really is samach perech. Perech means excruciating work, slavery.
Yeah.
60 is for 60 times 10,000. Again, so if that was true, then you should have called it saprach, not karpas. Right? Karpas is only mentioned one time in the whole Tanakh. Anybody know where? You should know it, because you all heard it 3 weeks ago tonight. Last time. Where and when? 6 pasuk in the Megillah. Chur, karpas, utechelet. What is chur, karpas, utechelet? They're describing the different the coats of the king. They describe it, chur, karpas, colors like it's brown. Karpas is a certain color. Halavai, if it was green, it would be perfect. But I don't think it is. Tchelet, we know, is a blue color. And these are the kind of materials that King Ahasuerus wore. Okay? So we know from that word karpas that it's a special kind of material. Okay? But what does that do with the Seder? Nothing to do with the Seder. I'm sorry, what is your name?
Danielle.
I'm amazed that you know this because I heard this from Rabbi Bernstein, Isaac Bernstein, who wrote it in his Haggadah. And then I found it in the Kli Yafar. It says in the Haggadah. Anyway, I found it just in a source. He says something that we tend to ignore. The coat of Yaakov, as Daniel said, it's called in the Torah what? Ketonet pasim. So Rashi, on that word pasim, says kimo karpas. It's a contraction of the word pasim. So his name, the name of the cult was really called Ketonet Karpasim. And therefore, the rabbis wanted us to call attention through the word to remember that the Karpas is, before we get into how we got out of Egypt, to understand how we got into Egypt. How did we get into Egypt? And the Karpas describes it perfectly. What is the Ketonet Pasim? What is that coat? It was a symbol of the hatred of the brothers, right? And that Yosef was treated differently, and they got rid of him because of that, etc., etc. So the Chachamim wanted us to think about the idea of Karpas, because the entire Seder, if you had time, I would do it, is to reunite the people. The family, the Jewish family, fell apart. We talked about family. We talked about nationhood. Fell apart when Amram and Yocheved divorced, and Miriam, their 5-year-old daughter, got them back together again. And all the people eventually, in order, and the culmination. Before we become a nation, we had to become a united family. And therefore, the whole Seder is a Seder of a united family. And therefore, it has to be by family, etc., etc. So before we can understand why we had to unite in order to become a nation, we have to understand how we got into Mitzrayim. The Karpas, just 1 second, the Karpas is the symbol of that. And then when they mentioned Karpas, they said, remember, this is how we got into trouble. Now we're going to get out. Yes?
You were trying to remember. It was Rabbeinu Manoah.
Manoah, right. It was not such a famous guy. Now, yes?
Karpas was also the symbol, the ketonet was the symbol of the first dipping.
Correct. So we have how many dippings in Pesach?
Two.
Why do we have two dippings on Pesach?
When it's going into Egypt and when it's going out.
Correct. When do we have dippings on going out?
When you dip the hyssop into
what they put on the mezuzah, right, into blood in order to atone for the dipping of the ketonet pasim into, right? When one united the family after one broke the family apart. And therefore we do two dippings and not three dippings. And that's the answer to the third question that you find no place in another. Okay? All right. So that's Karpas. I'm just going to go quickly because I want to go on to next week. And again, each piece we could talk about for a long time. Let's talk about one of the central rituals that is most misunderstood probably in the Haggadah is the Manishkana. I believe, I will prove to you that the Manishkana could never be questions that assess 6-7 year old ask in a moment. But I believe they purposely made the kids learn it by heart in order to keep them involved. Just like we allowed them to steal the Afikoman, even though stealing is not allowed, in order to keep them awake till at least the end of the meal when they get their Afikoman presents. So that's 90% of the Seder. And I think the rabbis made also the songs at the end to keep them awake while we sang so many songs at the end. So the Manishkana allegedly is what the children are going to ask. I'll tell you what, I'll prove to you they can't possibly ask these questions. Okay? What are the four questions? Okay? First question is, all other nights we eat chametz and matzah, this night we only eat matzah. How does a 7-year-old kid know that the rest
because
of the night
we're
only eating matzah? And don't tell me because they remember from last year, but they remember from last year the questions, he knows the answers too.
Because they seem to have been cleaning and throwing out all the bread, and they know only have matzah left over.
Possibly. A 7-year-old kid has to be very sharp to know, we're not going to eat any matzah tonight. Oh, no, not throwing the bread. We're going to put it in the freezer, and we're going to sell it, right? So we're not going to eat that. Okay? You want to go further? The second one's even harder. All the nights, we eat all kinds of vegetables and marar. Tonight, we only eat marar. We just 2 minutes ago ate one. Not maror. Okay? So that's first of all. Secondly, I don't eat maror the rest of the year. Maybe a little bit with gefilte fish, but that's as close as we come. We don't eat maror. We use it as a... So the whole doesn't make sense. We only eat maror tonight. If we only ate maror tonight, people wouldn't come to the state. Okay? And hotels would not be able to fulfill up. Okay? Third, we dip twice. Why don't we dip it all the rest of the year? First of all, I dip all the time when I have, you know, when in Jerry Seinfeld had a whole episode about the double dipping. So dipping obviously is part of, we do dip, but okay. But Jews didn't dip, and they dip only tonight, we dip by kings, etc. Okay. For Paseba, which is also very strange, because they used to eat on like a bed, big bed, right? And the food was on like a bed. So they were like almost like lying down. And that's what Haseba means, okay? And we, you know, we take a pillow, we lean on the left or whatever, but that's the way they ate the royalty in Greece, apparently. You can see some of the pictures, how they used to eat. Anyway, all of the nights, we eat Haseba. Tonight, how does the kid know we're going to do it twice? How does the kid know we're going to do only Haseba tonight? No child knows that. And I wrote this on the bottom of your sheets. If a child wanted to say, why is this night different than all the nights? What are more logical questions?
Unless right? Stay up late.
Why I'm staying up late, depending where you are in the world. Okay. Why do we have all these strangers coming who I don't recognize? Why do we have different colored dishes, usually?
And why do we gets have, their own kiddushka.
Right, different kiddushka. So far, that's basically what the kids are going to ask. Why is this night different? That's why this night is different. So if that's true, then what is the whole Manish time I mean? So there are many, many explanations. I'm going to give you two, and actually three. Do it as quickly as possible so we get on some things. But the first one is that it's not four questions. Where does it say that it's four questions?
It doesn't.
It's
really, we assume because it's Manish Tana, why is this night different? We say it four each time, or the Kolal Elod four times. So the Abarbanel says it's not one question. He asks basically your question. He says, every other Chag, we have one theme. Even though we have on Sukkot two mitzvahs, we have the theme of Achdus. The Jewish people are together. We bring all four species, symbolize four different kinds of people together. And the sukkah is one sukkah for all the Jewish people. It's a togetherness kind of symbol. The symbol of the shofar is broken tshuva. Every chag has its very clear symbol. Okay, that's shebechol ha'ilod. And all other chagim, it makes sense. We do this, we do that. But on Pesach night, it doesn't make any sense. On the one hand, we have the first question where you have to feel like a slave, and therefore we break the matzah and what we put away because a slave puts food away, and we eat matzah that was eaten by slaves. You know why slaves were given matzah? Because it constipates everybody and it doesn't make them give so much food, right? You can go 2-3 days without having to eat, or don't want to eat after you eat too much matzah. Anyway, so and that's a slave food. Okay, so we should be feeling like slaves. Second mitzvah, maror. Kula maror, we should be feeling like slaves. On the other hand, Abarbanel says, then we have to dip like kings. Are we slaves or are we kings? Are we poor or are we rich? And we go aseba like the rich, the wealthy people in Greek. So which one is it? Are we slaves or are we? And he answers, which is the only night of the year we're like this, is we're both. Right? Obviously not at the exact same moment. We should feel the pain of slavery on Pesach night, and then, only then, after you really feel the pain, can you feel the joy of alleviating that pain. I always tell people, they don't understand, people who never experience fill in the blank. People who never experience blindness don't appreciate the ability to see. People who never experienced, I don't know, when your knees are broken, you can't walk when the ability to walk. And it's true with everything. You can't. The whole point of Judaism is to try to appreciate things when we still have them. But you can't appreciate freedom, or you can appreciate freedom. I mean, nobody here in Israel, as bad as it is, nobody says, boy, at least tonight the Russians didn't kill 50 people. Right? Nobody would ever say, or the Gazans. That's not been part of our experience. Look at all the missiles and everything else. But in Ukraine, they can say that. You know, they didn't have a battle today. So it's very, our experience has to be feel the pain and then feel the joy. Very hard. Hardest part of the Seder, in my opinion. Okay. So that's what Abarbanel says. The Kli Yakar lived in the 1700s. Yosef Gamayev Shitz lived. He said something much deeper, and he says something which is touches all of us, unfortunately. He says, the word Lila in Judaism is always a symbol for galut, right? It's always a symbol for diaspora, right? Day is Shia, you know, Hagid Baboker Chazdecha. During day, we talk about the chesed of Hashem. It's very obvious that God is with us. Then Munacha Balelova, when the darkness comes, we talk about Emuna when things are not good, right? Diaspora. He says the following. He says, we've had three or four diasporas in Jewish history. The first diaspora was 210 years in Egypt. Then we went to Israel. We left after the Korban Bayit Rishon, 400 years later. Spent how many years in, according to the Perushim, how many years in Persia?
Seventy years, whatever.
We went back, and depending on the ask whether it was another diaspora or not, but let's just assume not. And then, after the second Korban, we've been in diaspora since, what year was the Korban?
70
CE. So you figure it out, right? Whatever it is 1953 years? Am I correct? Something like that. Mm-hmm. All right? So he asks the following. Manish Tanah HaLaila HaZeh? Why is this diaspora? Why is this galus so much more painful, so much more difficult than all the other galus? And then he says, these four questions are really explanations. Shevachal, you want to know the reason? Shevachal Aleilo, because in all the other diasporas, right? Achlu chametz matzah. We ate chametz and matzah. What is chametz and what is matzah? According to him, chametz is that which binds together, and matzah, and he shows from the word yachatz, is that which splits. Okay? He says all other diasporas, there were always fighting among the Jews, but there's always coming together when it was important. We know it during Purim, and I go through each one. During Egypt, all the Jews came together, and they did, at the end, they did the Seder, etc. Right? At the end, they came together. Halayla hazeh kulo matzah, this diaspora for 2,000 years. He wrote this 200 years ago, but nothing's changed. Look at the last week and a half in this country. Right? Kulo matzah, we hate each other. We can't talk to each other out of respect. Right? I always said, you can disagree without being disagreeable. But Israelis haven't learned that. And I say Israelis because it's not part of the culture here is to be disagreeable, you know, let them know how bad they are. Okay? And that's what he says, that's the reason. You want to know why it's 2,000 years and we haven't had a Beis HaMikdash? That's the first reason. Second reason, he says, maror is bitter. People who are bitter are usually people who are very money conscious. Well, he says greedy. He says all of the diasporas had sha'ar yirakot. They had some maror, but they also didn't have it all the time. And they weren't greedy when we didn't take, we could have taken much more during Chol Shev than they, we could, during Chol Shev we could have ransacked all of Mitzrayim, taken all their money, and every single bearer bonds they have, right? But we didn't. We asked them nicely after, and they gave it to us, right? So we weren't greedy. Similarly, in time of Esther, it says after they won the war, they didn't touch the booty, right? But this generation, this Jews have been more greedy than all the other generations. He's talking about 2,000 years, not just, you know, obviously we're looking at it from the 21st century, but Jews being greedy, the caricature of a Jew being greedy, he says the Jews have been more greedy than any other diaspora. Third question is dipping. He used that as a thing for sensuality. He says Jews were always, they committed all kinds of sins, but they didn't commit sins of sexuality in the first two diasporas, but in this diaspora, many more sins of sexuality. You want to know why it's so long? That's one of the reasons. And finally, he says, what does it mean to lay back? It means we're lazy. He says all other diasporas, we weren't so lazy. This diaspora are much more lazy. And again, he gives examples, but we're not going to. And therefore, you want to know why? That's the reason why. Okay? Now I'm going to say a reason that I've never said publicly before, and I have and I will prove this to you. And again, I can show you, I'll show you this through a couple of examples. Manish Tanah HaLayil HaZeh Mikol HaLeilot. This is the simplest explanation to the simplest way of understanding the question. Why is this night, next year, next Wednesday night, different from all other nights of the year? You know what the answer is? With all the four questions, not anything else. Next Wednesday night is different than all the other nights. You know why? Halachically, next Wednesday night is not night, but it is day. Okay? In Jewish law, next Wednesday night is day. And I'll prove it to you. It says in the Gemara, you're not allowed to say Hallel except during the day. And yet, next Saturday, next Wednesday night, most congregations say Hallel. Okay? We say it, if you have the Haggadah, talking about the future, but talking about that night also. Chal Bach turned it into a song. Shomrim Hafkei, Hafkei Le'irpa, Kol Hayom L'Kol HaLayla. Okay? Karev Yom L'Karev Layla.
Where do you know?
Where is that amount? If you find the page.
It's another Hallel, okay.
It's not Hallel. It's right before the end. Asher Lo Yom V'Lo Layla. What is he, where does he say that? All right. Anyway, that's the words. The words are the future. This night will be lo yom v'lo laila. It's someplace between night and day. Next week, you don't say Shema, according to Jewish law. Why? It's a leil shimurim. God got personally involved in the evening. And did it all himself, and therefore it's a day like, it's a night like no other night, and therefore many of the halachot are different. And one of the things I'm going to prove to you is, just in the next minute, I'm going to list off four things that are different. Jews usually cannot feel two opposite emotions at the same time. You can't feel pain and joy at the same moment, correct?
Yeah.
Very hard to. And yet Pesach night, we're supposed to feel that. Every other time during the year, okay, it started with, I think that the rabbis in Korah, but it really started with God and Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur, says Rav Soloveitchik, is a chag, is a yontif. But how do you have a yontif meal on Yom Kippur? He says that therefore God makes the ninth of Tishrei like a yontif. And the meal is supposed to have on yontif is really having on the ninth. Not just to prepare, bulk up for the fast. Therefore, he says, Yom Kippur, we can split days. Jews are great at splitting days. When I was a rabbi, you had to go from a funeral to a bar mitzvah, one after the other. And we're good at compartmentalizing if it's not at the same time. Pesach night, we have to do it at the same time. But if you think about it, six times during the year, we split between two days, right? Yom Kippur, we have the Chag on Erev Yom Kippur, and the serious part, if you will, tshuva, fasting, self-awareness, all on Yom Kippur, on the 10th. The rabbis came along and said, what is a Yom Kippurim? Because Yom Kippur is like Purim. Why? They came along and made Purim exactly the same, but in reverse the order. Purim is a very serious day. The whole Jewish people were threatened with extinction, correct? Because they were assimilating, right? Where's the serious part of Purim? All we remember is the good fun part, but where's the serious part? The day before. We have to fast. We have to take stock of ourselves, right? People don't quite celebrate it with the same gusto, that seriousness, as they do the Purim part, but it was supposed to split the days. The day before is serious. The day after, fun, because Jews can do that. And then Rabbi Herzog, I believe, said it works on Purim. We're going to do it in the State of Israel, right?
Yeah.
There's no other country in the world, I believe, that has its Remembrance Day, whatever you want to call it in that country, Memorial Day, Remembrance Day, the day before Independence Day. We, like idiots, just put the two together because they do it on Purim. We do it on Yom Kippur. Okay? You also do it, by the way, two other times of the year. Okay? One other time is, if we have a study together, I'm writing about it now, Rosh Chodesh. Rosh Chodesh actually is a Yom Tov. Why is it a Yom Tov for women, etc.? But Erev Rosh Chodesh is called Yom Kippur Katan, and some people fast. Okay? The same idea. Erev Yom Kippur, Erev Rosh Chodesh is serious, and Rosh Chodesh is going to be celebratory. Same thing for some of the people, especially, we go out of our way to make sure to avoid it. But the day before Pesach is supposed to be a serious day for Bechorim, because they were almost destroyed. And therefore, you're supposed to fast. And nobody does. Reason not going to have. Serious day, and then going to Pesach and celebrate that we were not destroyed, Bechorim. Okay? So we see that that's a very Jewish thing. But the same night, only on Pesach night, because it's not a night, it's a day. Okay? Let's continue. Okay? If you want to. All right, we did Manush Tana. Okay. This is one of the strange... You have to understand also something else. Why did the rabbis put things in the Haggadah that don't belong in the Haggadah, or seem not to belong in the Haggadah? So again, on a simple level, if you turn in my Haggadah, it is on page... Hold on a second. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Okay. Okay. I have it on page... Where is it? Here's the one. Yeah. I have it on... It starts on 56, but then... Is it right after Abba Dimayinu?
Yeah.
No, that's not the one I'm talking about. I know I have this one too. The one after it. He's 18 years old. There we go. 60. In this Haggadah. Amar Elazar ben Azariah.
Okay, what's
60. 60. Yeah. So what does it say? What does it say here? This paragraph has absolutely nothing to do with the Seder. Okay. Now, the previous paragraph, if you look back at the previous paragraph, there were five phenomenal rabbis who changed the course of Jewish history, who lived right after the Churban. Okay? My grandson is saying this, my 7-year-old grandson is saying this to our Torah, 56. Ma'azim Rabbi Elazar, same Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yeshua Razaben Azariah, I'm sorry, Razaben Azariah, Rabbi Kiv, Rabbi Tarfa. Okay, they said at least this has to do with the Seder. They had the Seder in Bnei Brak. If you ever drive on the road next to Bnei Brak, you know what the crossing is called? Mesubin. Why is it called Mesubin? Shayam Mesubin Bnei Brak.
Okay, so.
Okay. Anyway, Adam is stopping and see I'm trying to call the etc. At least it has to do with the Seder. Okay? My grandson is getting into our Torah. Why does it have to tell us that they're in the house of Rabbi Akiva? Because the halacha is that if you're with five students together with their rabbi, you're supposed to go to your rabbi's house. Who was the rabbi of all these students? It was Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Tarfon lived in Lund. Question is, why does it tell us that he was going to Rabbi Akiva when they should have been going to Lund? And they provided light for them. Why? Because Rabbi Akiva was known to keep them happy when they were most dejected. Why were they most dejected? After the Churban, what do they used to do Seder night? Right? They lived a generation right after the Churban. What did everybody do Seder night? I'll give you a hint. What did they eat?
Matzah.
They ate matzah, correct. But what else did they eat that we don't eat today?
Passover lamb.
The Passover lamb.
Okay.
They went to the Beit HaMikdash. They brought the Korban Pesach. And it was a phenomenal experience. Now they don't have the Beit HaMikdash anymore. Imagine living the generation where you no longer have the Paschal lamb. They were very depressed. So they went to Rabbi Akiva because Rabbi Akiva had the way of making them happy because, you know, the famous story, and he did this a couple of times in the Rabbi Akiva. They walked the same five rabbis at the end of the Gemara Makot, says they passed through the Holy of Holies, and the fox came out of the Holy of Holies. Everybody started crying. Rabbi Akiva started laughing. Why are you crying? Why are you laughing? Crying because they saw the Holy of Holies, the fox. He says, yes, but that's the first Nebuah. The second Nebuah says, people will learn, again, be learning, old people and young people, and the Beit HaMikdash will be rebuilt. So I'm so happy because the first one came through, and then the second one has to come through. So Rabbi Akiva had a way of making, and they say, Nichamtanu, Akiva, Nichamtanu. You made us, you comforted us. So they went to Rabbi Akiva's house. Went to Rabbi Akiva's house, and apparently it was at this same meeting, because it was this, right afterwards. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, Hare ani keben shivim shana, I am like 70 years old. Okay, this is the simple explanation. Velo zachiti sheteyomer yitziyat Mitzrayim, and I was not convinced or was not sure that we should say in the third paragraph of Kriyat Shema, we should say, Mitzrayim, Balelot, in Arabic, we just started an hour ago. Okay? So therefore, during the day, we say three paragraphs of Shema, but at night, we just debate when you say the third paragraph. Why are you supposed to not say the third paragraph? Because what mitzvah is in the third paragraph?
Tzitzit.
And if you don't wear tzitzit at night, you don't. Okay? After Drasha Ben Zoma, until Ben Zoma came along and he made a drasha in the pasuk, Lamantis Kor, Yom Sechana Yitzrayim, Kol Yimei Hayecha. There's a mitzvah every single day to remember Yitzhiyat Mitzrayim, which has nothing to do with the Seder. There's a special mitzvah on the Seder night to tell over the story, not to remember, to tell over the story as if you were there, Sipu Yitzhiyat Mitzrayim, which has nothing to do with the mitzvah of Lamantis Kor, Yom Sechana Yitzrayim, Kol Yimei Hayecha, every single day. So Rabbi Ben Zoma convinced Rabbi Yolanda Ben Azariah it's important to say the third paragraph Shema at night. Okay, because it says this, the Chachamim want me. What is this doing in our life? Everybody understand the question?
Yeah.
It has zero to do with Pesach. So obviously the rabbis didn't just stick it in there because it's a Mishnah. It happens to be a Mishnah. In fact, the beginning of the Mishnah says, Maskirin Yitziyat Mitzrayim Balelot. It's exactly the same thing. But it says we'd say the third paragraph of Shema even at night. What is it doing there? So there are many, as I said, many answers. I will share with you one, which seems a little convoluted, but it's based on what I just told you in the last 5 minutes. I didn't just tell you to tell you. You will all be able to understand. Okay? They all gathered. Okay, and also there's this medrash that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was not respected, and then therefore he became Kiven Shivim Shana, all of a sudden he turned around, you know, David Copperfield looked 70 years old, right?
Because he was asked to head the baby.
He was asked to head, sure, and he's only 18 years old, how could he have, like, how do you have respect for an 18-year-old? So he looked 70 years old, now he has respect. Today, it's the opposite, right? The younger you are to become a billionaire, the more you're respected, right? I have a feeling that if Elon Musk was 80 years old, like Warren Buffett, he wouldn't be as respected, you know. Whatever. Don't talk about that. We're going to get back to the Mikai. Okay. So that's the, what is it doing here? Okay. So one of the explanations, I don't remember who says it, says the following. First of all, the word, it was very strange anyway. Below zachiti shete amer. It should have been tagid. Lagid kriyat shema. You're supposed to say mazkirin. What does te omer mean? Okay, why does it use that verb? Okay. Second thing. Okay. What is the drasha ben zoma, etc., etc. So now, in order to understand what he's saying and what on a deeper level, I believe the saying and it has to, and applies to us today. Okay. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah again lived in the generation right after the Churban. Apparently, during the 70 years in Babel, there was a big debate whether we should be sad or happy when Pesach comes. Because the Beit HaMikdash was just destroyed, right? How could we be happy when 2 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, they had a, you know, dancing and singing, and right? And apparently the halacha that they followed was, we are just going to go through the motions on Pesach night. We are not going to be happy, because how can we be happy, right? Ech nashir shir, how can we sing a song when the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed? And they went through the basic things like the second day yeshiva guys do here, right? They ate the matzah, they did a thing, they went through the Haggadah, they finished in 22 minutes, and that was it, because it was a very sad time, okay? Now comes the second Korban. The rabbis and all the people are asking, what mood should we celebrate Pesach? And that's what Rabbi Elazar is saying on a deeper level. Amar Rabbi ben Azariah, Hare ani kiven shivim shana. I was of the opinion that we should celebrate even after the second Churban, like we did during the 70 years of the first Churban. In other words, not be so happy. Okay? Below zachiti shetei omer, the word tei omer, Cruz means you say it in joy. That we should te'amer yitziyat Mitzrayim. We should talk about it. Balelot again during. Balelot means always a symbol of diaspora. Okay? When you're in the diaspora, how can we be happy? And he says, yes, you can be happy even in the diaspora. Even when things are going bad, even when things look terrible, you should still be happy. A Jew can be happy no matter what. When there's no diaspora, even when there is diaspora, you have to remember Mitzrayim as something great. And they say even in the time of Mashiach, even in the time of Mashiach, we will celebrate Pesach as a happy time. It's not going to supersede the Mashiach coming. So what? As a result of this, people celebrated Pesach for the last 2,000 years in joy. Even if the Cossacks were beating up Jews. Even if half the nation is fighting against each other. We're able to celebrate Pesach in joy. And therefore, Jews should not, how should I say, let what's going on in day-to-day affect their holidays. Because the holidays celebrate what it was like then and what it should be like now. And that's one of the secrets of Jewish survival, is we were able to go outside, if you would say lamad, go outside the present circumstances and say, you know, and saying, whatever they're doing to us, we are able to rise above it. And that's what this paragraph is telling us. Whether it's going on in Israel, whether it's going on whatever, Jews were always able, believe me, compared to what went on 100 years ago and 1,000 years ago, we have it great, okay? We have it great. 1,000 years ago, when the government told you you had to do something and you had to leave or you had to be killed, you had nobody to go to, you couldn't go to the IDF. And, you know, we don't realize how great we have it as Jews compared to our previous generations. And if you ever talk to any of the older people who was here in the 40s and 50s, how they had no physical goods here, and you know, we have it so great, we don't appreciate it. So that's what we're trying to say. Have Pesach in joy, no matter what's going on in your life. No matter what's going on in the country. Okay, I see it's 8:20, so I'm going to go quickly to... Mitzchila. Okay. Mitzchila Odei Avodah Zarah. Are you Avodeinu? And we did say Yomar already. Where is it? I think, where is it? It's someplace. I should have had an index. But what can I tell you? Mitzchila Ezra, anybody have it? Okay, good.
76.
76, good, thank you. Okay, again, talking about something which makes no sense in the context of the Haggadah. Mitzchila Ezra, Dar Zara, Yuavotenu. Our forefathers were idol worshippers. What does this whole paragraph have to do with the Haggadah? Yachshav, Kerbala Makam Lavorotov, Zinemar, etc., etc. Terach, it goes through. Terach was an idol worshipper, etc. What does that have to do with Pesach? What does that have to do with the Seder? What does it do with Egypt? Everybody understand? It makes no sense. Unless you understand and go back to the very first class we were together. I'm going to give you an answer. It says that in the time of the Beit HaMikdash, the mitzvah on Seder night, as Gemara says, Rav and Shmuel, everybody agrees what the joy of the Seder is, of leaving Mitzrayim, how we should celebrate it. But there was an argument, what is the pain part of the Seder? Okay? Rav says that painful part of the Seder is Mitzchila Odei Avodah Zarah Yavodeinu. We have to remember that we started out as idol worshippers. Shmuel says the painful part of the Seder is Avodim Hayinu L'Paro Mitzrayim. Okay? That's all it says. What's going on here? What does it mean? I haven't yet answered our question. So, in order to answer the question, as I say, go back to the very first class we had, and with this I'll answer hopefully another question. The following. There was always a disagreement between the greatest rabbis. What is the essence of Judaism? A nation or a religion? Right? We talked about that. Remember people here the first time? Right? So there's always been that clash. And if we understand the machloket between Rav and Shmuel in that context, we'll understand that is what they were disagreeing about. According to Rav, the essence of Judaism is religion. And therefore, in order to go back to the beginnings of the religion, you have to go back to idol worship, because idol worship leads to no religion, and therefore we were able to overcome that and become a religion. Shmuel says, no, the essence of Judaism is the peoplehood, and therefore, Avadimayin, the physical slavery, that was the origin of our, if you want to call it, our birth story. Okay? Same argument back and forth. Which one is first? In the Haggadah? First of all, which one is in the Haggadah? Avadimayinu or Mitzivah de Avadadora? They're both in the Haggadah. Because the rabbi said that both of them are part of our origin story. That's number one. Number two, Avadimayinu is always first, because nationhood, again, is always before
religion.
Okay, I'm going to end with the same idea, new idea that's not in the Haggadah, with the paragraph before, which is also very, very strange. Not because what is it doing here, but I'm going to read to you the simple meaning of this paragraph. Okay? Hotel owners would go crazy on this Haggadah. The paragraph right before we did, page 72, if you have this Haggadah. Okay? Yachol Neros Chodesh. We really should have celebrated the Seder and had Pesach night on Rosh Chodesh 2 weeks ago, or 10 days ago. Okay? We really should have it on Rosh Chodesh. And why don't we have it on Rosh Chodesh and have the Seder on the first Chodesh Nisan? Talmud Lomar by Yom Ahu. Because it says in the Torah you have to do it on the day you left Egypt.
Okay.
How does that answer the question? And what about if you didn't have the Pasuk, we would do it on the night and we would do it on Rosh Chodesh Nisan? That's what it seems. Without this Pasuk, we would have Seder night on Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Okay. Yom Ahu, but I say it has to be on that day. Yachol Mivod Yom. And logically, we should have it during that day, right? What was during the day? Talmud Lomar. What was during the day of the, again, when they had the Beit HaMikdash? What did they have during the time of the Beit HaMikdash? What did all the Jews running around, not selling their chametz? What they were doing on the day of Rosh, before the
Korban
Pesach? They were bringing what? They're bringing the Korban Pesach during the day, right? Talmud Lomar, why don't we have it during the day when they brought the Korban Pesach? Lamar, Bavur Zeh. It has to be because of this. Bavur Zeh lo amati yelo b'sha. It has to be because of this when you have matzah and maror in front of you. What is going on here? We didn't have these two psukim. We really should have the Seder 2 weeks ago before that.
Okay.
And now we should have the Seder Erev Pesach. What's going on? What does it mean? Am I understanding the question? Okay. So I have, an original answer, based on the same answer as the next paragraph. Okay? The symbol of our nationhood is Rosh Chodesh Nisan. HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodeshim. You establish your calendar. Establishing the calendar is the beginning of nationhood. That's when the Jews became a nation. Right? And therefore, HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodeshim. Yachal Meros Chodesh, if Judaism was essentially a religion of only nationhood, then we should celebrate when the Jews became a nation, on the Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Not when they left Egypt, when they became free as a people, we're going to establish our own calendar. Talmud Lomar, okay. Then what's the second part? Iba Yom Ahu, Yachal Mimo'od Yom. If Judaism is a religion of, is not a nationhood, but it's a religion, then we should really celebrate Pesach when we were doing the religious, most religious thing on Pesach is bringing Korban Pesach, right?
Okay.
And therefore we should really have it in the afternoon at the time we brought the Korban Pesach. So the Chazal said, no, that's not, Judaism is neither just a nationhood, and therefore we don't have it on Rosh Chodesh, and it's neither just a celebrating Korban Pesach, but it has to be both together. Where do we symbolize both together? You have to have the Korban Pesach together with the matzah and the maror. The matzah and the maror symbolize the physical pain of slavery, and the Korban Pesach symbolizes the religious part of being a free, if you would call it, religion. And only when you have all three together have you fulfilled what it means to be a Jew.
Very good.
I think we will stop here. Perfectly.
Good.
Yes.
That's why Pesach is really day four.
Rabbi Sacks has a whole lecture on that topic, because if you look back, you look at the Navi, not time now, but he does. We say, it says Pesach, because it's called, you know, that course on Pesach, and whatever. Anyway, you're right, 100% right. We will leave it there. I hope these ideas, especially until you tell them to anybody else, you have an advantage over everybody else. You can keep them, take the ones that are most memorable to you or you think will be memorable to your family, and I use it at the beginning of a discussion. Don't say, I want to tell you something, and then go on to the next thing. Let them respond and let them say, oh, I don't think it's true, and go on and have a nice, long discussion. Better to have it after you serve the main course, though. Okay? I wish you all a Chag Sameach for Kasher. You spent too much time on the Kasher. Thank you so much, Norman. Be back there, see what I ask every week. Did I pass?
You know the answer.
Well, I've given this once or twice before. Never did this before.
Where are you going to be for your trip?
I will be up north with my entire family, and then my not the Mechutanim, then my immediate family, including my wife. Right, Judy will be with us from Sunday to Wednesday.
Very nice. Very nice.
Well, yeah, but I never made paper for myself before. It's ridiculous. You know, I have to. Even though they said, don't worry.